Carlos, make the comment that you made to me.
I was just saying that when we were talking about conflict, Dexter and I, we were realizing that sometimes it's hard to do healthy conflict. And whenever you find yourself having a hard time really mining for good, healthy conflict, you need to go back and question the trust base. Everything builds on the trust. Like in my team, I think we do a pretty good job of airing opinions, but once it gets to the level of personal, where it starts to get personal, that the reason something didn't get done was because this person didn't get it done. Once it gets there, everybody, you can tell, everybody pulls out and backs off. Not to say that the conversations don't happen, they just don't happen in the meeting. So my, as the leader of the team, I'm very aware that it's a trust issue, that they don't feel like that there's a trust in this specific 15-man team to be able to air specific individual situations. And the level of trust is good to a level to here. We can have a conflict to that degree. But once it gets to this level, we don't have that trust level yet, where we can really bring up specific situations and deal with it in the meeting and not deal with it in small pockets outside.
Yeah.
And so I guess Pastor Paul mentioned it early, but it's good for us to go back to that, because we're going to go into each one. And then when you realize it's hard to do the commitment or hard to do the conflict, you got to go back to where is it in the trust level, because that's what's hindering anything from growing further. So.
Yeah, that's great. So that's, they build on each other. So if you're having a commitment problem in your team, if you just focus on the commitment problem, you won't really solve the problem. The commitment problem is because there's a deterioration here and because there's something not fully in place. Or as teams grow, you build levels of trust. So it may not even be a problem, it's just that your team, to get to the next level, you got to go and build more trust so that you can get a higher level of conflict, greater commitment, because we have to increase our productivity as the demands grow. Now, we're going to finish the last three in this session. When you just look at the triangle, I mean, this is not accurately drawn, but you see that if you just took the triangle whole, the whole area, 100%, and then what part, what percent this is, obviously much higher percentage of the whole, less, and not much. But when you look at these two, this is more than 50% of the whole, just as a diagram. And it's true in the way teams work. These areas, if you get these really right and progressively right, the other things pretty much fall into place. So we only need this last session, just talk about all three. I'll go through and give you all the fill-ins and the information for the three, and then we'll come back and see whatever time we have left and do some of the questions for whichever ones are appropriate. All right, so we'll start with the third foundation of a productive team is commitment. And I've written out on the side, these are the dysfunctions. So these are the foundations. So a dysfunction is an absence of trust, a fear of conflict, a lack of commitment, an avoidance of an accountability, and inattention to results. Now, members of productive teams that engage in unfiltered conflict are able to buy in, and that's the key phrase, around important decisions, even when various individuals initially disagree. That is because they ensure that all ideas and opinions are put on the table and considered, giving confidence to team members that no stone has been left untouched. So number one, commitment is when team members agree to buy in, that's our fill-in, buy in to and fully embrace a decision even when they don't agree, or at least didn't initially agree. Now, commitment is not achieved just because everyone votes for a particular decision. I hope we're not so naive to think that just because everybody raised their hand and said yes, they actually really committed. I mean, just think about how many times in your professional life you agreed, but really from the heart, you weren't fully agreeing. That's just merely consensus. And consensus is not commitment. And it can be easy as a leader to just settle with consensus. Because it's a lot easier to get consensus than it is to get commitment. Commitment takes a lot more work. And work means time. And time is always the pressure, isn't it? So it can be easy just to settle on, yeah, they all agreed, they all raised their hand, we got consensus. But you don't really have, from the heart, commitment. Number two, buy-in is achieved when the members of a team know that every opinion has been voiced without reservation. At that point, they will generally rally behind the final decision of the team. This is something that you'll find, and you probably already have found, is that most people, just about everybody I've dealt with, most people don't need to have their ideas adopted. They just need to know that they were really heard, genuinely understood, and sincerely considered. That's usually enough. I mean, I guess you could find the rare exception of someone that just has to have their ideas, but for the most part, people don't need to have their ideas adopted as long as they know you heard them and understood, because that's important. Sometimes people feel like, yeah, they listened, but they really didn't understand. And a leader can justify, said, I listened to everything they said. Yep, but did you take the time to ask the questions to really understand clearly exactly what they were saying? And then, did you genuinely consider it? And the possibility was tossed around and consider genuinely. In the end, if a person knows that their idea has been thoroughly considered by the team and the team has opted to go a different direction, almost everybody will say, all right, I'm in then. We've looked at all the different angles. I realize my idea initially is not as good as I thought it was. The team's agreed on this. I'm in. Now, one of the key things you do as a leader is that you make sure that every member of the team can articulate exactly what the team has decided. That they can say back to you, all right, what did we decide? I don't know how many times I've had the experience, and I know you'll have experienced it too, where someone says, I didn't think that's what we agreed to. Have you had experiences like that? That's not what I agreed to. I thought we said we were going to do this. No, we didn't say that. We said this. I don't think so. That happens a lot of time. So it's not just buy-in, but it's clarity. Does every member of the team know exactly what was decided? And can they say it back to you? You go through that process, there's clarity and there's buy-in. And most people will get on board and make a real commitment from the heart. Our team has worked through all this. We came up with this decision. Now, it's my decision too. I've embraced it. There's real commitment. Thoughts, questions, comments? Number four, the fourth foundation of a productive team is accountability. Accountability. Accountability is the willingness of team members to remind one another when they're not living up to the performance and attitudinal standards of the team. And that's the key. Point number one, the key to this kind of accountability is that it's peer-to-peer. Real effectiveness takes place on a team when the individual team members are holding one another to the decisions that they made. There is a certain level of accountability when the leader is the one doing all the holding people accountable. But you've come to another level of productivity when it's the team members that are actually holding each other accountable. Because the reality is, leaders rarely have as good of good information as the actual team members do. Because you know you act a little differently when you're around the boss. Right? I mean, that's the general tendency. But when you're just around the peers, the team members, they're the ones who really see, are you fully engaged in this project? And so when it's peer-to-peer, then that's real accountability. And that happens when real commitment takes place. Because if I come out of a meeting and I've committed my time, resources, my focus, I'm going to give my heart to see this happen, and I see my coworker who was in the same meeting, made the same commitment, he's slacking off, I'm not happy about it. You see, if I only made one of those consensus kind of commitments and he's slacking off, that's okay, because I'm going to slack off too. I'm not going to hold him accountable because I don't really want to be accountable myself. I just went along with the decision. I kind of think it's a stupid decision. Or maybe not the best, but they wanted to do it, so I'll go along with it and they'll see. So you have that kind of level of commitment. You don't want accountability for yourself. And you don't want to poke your coworker when he is not holding other people accountable. Number two, the leader must embrace accountability for it to become a part of the team culture. The leader models accountability when he or she publicly submits to the accountability of the other team members. That's so crucial. I was a regional director in Maranatha years ago, and I was responsible for our southeast region. And so one of our strategies reaching university students is we would purchase fraternity and sorority houses. Now, especially in the South, fraternities and sororities are a big deal. And they build these huge mansions, I mean like antebellum mansions with huge columns and these massive buildings that have house a lot of people, plus have big rooms for meetings. So, but a fraternity will go in, and after 5 or 10 years of parties and hard living, those things were pretty run down. So we'd go in, get them at a good price, fix them up, and they're always right there on the immediate campus, house them, put our own students in them, make them kind of a discipleship house, and there was always a big enough place for a meeting room. So in one of our particular campuses, the University of Auburn, which is a very prestigious southern campus, and on Fraternity Row, we had one of the premier buildings there. And so the guy who was one of our campus directors lived in the house. He was responsible for the upkeep of the house. And if you lived there, there were certain standards that you agreed to live by as far as the way you kept your room. And so I would go as the regional director, I would pop in, and one of the things I would do, I'd just do a little spot inspection. I'd just go up on the second and third floor and open a couple random rooms. And every time I went, I could tell our leader, he's not holding people accountable. And so every time I'd get on him, I said, this is your job. The people have agreed to certain standards, they're not living up to it. And you got to hold them accountable. And every time, yeah, you're right, I'm going to do better. And I'd come back the next time and the same thing. And one time I had a brainstorm. I don't know why it took me so long to figure it out. I went into his room. And the revelation hit me. His was the messiest of all. So he could not hold anybody else accountable because he didn't want to be held accountable himself. And my leadership dilemma melted before my very eyes. There was the problem right there, you see. He hadn't personally committed to the standards. Oh, he had raised his hand, yes, I'll do it, but he wasn't committed to it, so he didn't have any moral authority to actually hold other people. Because if he actually started to say, hey, your room's not clean, they're going to say, who are you to talk to us? Look at the mess in your room. So accountability is done, it flows out of commitment. And it, when real commitment takes place, it works at a great level when every member of the team are holding each other to high standards of performance. Make sense? Clear? Fifth foundation of a productive team, and by the time we get there, there's just not a whole lot to say. We got a description here. Members of productive teams that trust one another, engage in conflict, commit to their decisions, and hold one another are very likely to set aside their individual needs and focus on what is best for the team. All right, so I got a few minutes here. Let's go back to commitment. And our commitment questions. What is the single most effective thing you do that promotes genuine buy-in on your team? How do you get people to, from the heart, commit to team decisions? Why do you think it's so effective? And then, what's the most frequent mistake you make that tends to erode buy-in, at least potentially, on your team? So think about it for a minute. And then begin discussing it with the members at your table. Let's see, I would like to hear from Carlos.
Yeah.
Carlos? Edwin, what did you say?
Yeah, he was listening in. We have a team of 15 people, all creative individuals. Ideas are our bread and butter. So one of the things, and it's a diverse group. We have visuals, web, writing, you know, it's just different worlds.
Yeah.
But what we found as a great best practice is at the end of the meeting, we only started doing this recently, we have somebody documenting the minutes real time. So when we're done talking, we go back, last 5 minutes of the meeting, we go back and go, all right, everybody, let's just take a moment and review. Okay, so Edwin is going to do this on this day. So we've purposed to state the action item or the decision in a verb with a name and a date. So it's best practice for us because sometimes you think you understood the concept or you agreed to something, but when you look at it and you're actually seeing it on paper or projected, yeah. Then you realize, wait, that's what I agreed to. No, wait. And you know, and there have been several times that we've qualified the decision. Yeah. Like, no, we can't do it on that week. That's the same week we're doing this. It's like, oh, and then you know, it shuffles for the team, but it's been very helpful for us. So that more and more we're seeing whenever we do our next meeting, majority of the things that we said we were gonna do gets done because the level of commitment is clear. And the person's name is there. He's saying, okay, that's my own, I'm taking ownership. And yeah. We run it by, so if it's, let's say, JJ. So JJ will do this. Then JJ is going, yes, it goes on his to-do. He's very clear on it. And we have a physical document that we can refer back to.
Great. What's the most frequent mistake you make?
The what erodes buy-in is when a decision gets made outside of the team. Meaning the team wasn't in on the decision. Apostolic team decided, we're going to do this. Bam.
Hard to commit to something you weren't involved in.
Yeah, so I end up with tasks. I go to my team and I have tasks. You're getting this done by this day. You're getting this done by this day. And they weren't, what's this for? Why are we doing this? So some of the thought process isn't there. You know, the big whys didn't get thought through. So I was just telling Dexter, the times that we do have the time to think through we were able to bring the buy-in back. But when we're rushing through something that needs to get done this week, so the people don't have a outcome objective in mind or a buy-in emotionally to the success of the project, they're just running a task.
Yeah.
So I found out that when the next, taking the time, which I don't get to do all the time, but taking the time to sit down with the person owning the project and explaining what's at stake and why the decision was made the way it was, having him ask the necessary questions so that by the time he leaves the discussion, he has a clear bullseye and a clear value behind it, who helps. But I don't get to do that all the time, so very rarely.
Yeah. Carlos, who do you want to hear from?
Oh, over there. Gans. We haven't heard Gans in a while.
I mean, we can't have a staff development Thursday without hearing from Gans at least once, right?
Test.
He's such a celebrity, he needs two mics.
I was hoping not to get called for this one.
Okay. Gans, what's the single most effective thing you do that promotes genuine buy-in on your team?
Well, I'm a positivity, and so I feel that the single most effective thing that I can do is if I buy into it, a total, like what Carla said, a total emotional buy-in translates into an unbelievable enthusiasm for a project.
Singing and dancing and
whatever it takes. which is one of the things at Green Hills. whatever you need for that particular project, as long as I can deliver it, I will deliver it. And I think like for a team such as Green Hills, where you also have a whole bunch of different people who are very differently wired, having a cheerleader, someone there pushing people on for the rah-rah, is very important.
Yeah.
Which relates now to the
Why do you think it's so effective? Why do people respond to that?
I think it's effective because for the people who aren't so much, who haven't completely bought in, I guess the natural tendency is if they're not totally into it, they haven't bought completely into it yet. Having someone there to say it's going to be okay, it's good, we're going to pull things together and have all that come together, that helps motivate them to take that extra step to do what they need to do for the project.
Yeah, great.
Which relates now to the frequent mistake, which is I don't speak up if there's something I have no total buy into, because I have a problem with conflict.
You do.
I do.
Yeah.
So because I'd much rather see that, I'd much rather have the harmony thing going on, and I don't necessarily wanna. Yes, I bet you all thinking I had no depth. I know. They're all up for left and I. Oh, you're so sweet. That's the harmony thing. Anyway, so there. Since I don't speak up for opportunities I disagree with, the tendency for me is if I don't buy into something, I won't speak up because I'd much rather the things be okay. And if I don't speak up, then I don't have the total buy-in myself. So when I'll do what I need to do, I'll convince myself, let's do this. And if things go wrong, then my instinct is, okay, I'm not held accountable for this because I didn't buy into it completely.
Yeah, but that's wrong.
It's very wrong. I know. The entire conversation with Chryso over here just opened my mind to a world of hurt because she's the complete opposite of me. So I'm grateful that she's at our table for once because she really made me see a lot of things that I needed to improve on, yeah.
Great. And
it's, don't be sorry. That's just the way it is.
So remember, you don't really have a problem with conflict.
I don't.
No.
It's an accountability thing then? Trust. Oh, trust. Oh, it's even deeper.
It is deeper. It's a sin beneath the sin beneath the sin beneath the sin.
So if there was like a negative over here, I'll be like A minus one.
No. It just ends right there. So trust.
Can I sit down now?
Yes. Once you select who you would like to hear from.
I would like all of you to hear from the wisdom that is Chryso.
The wisdom that
that's
is.
That's a bunch of, anyway.
What's the single most effective thing you do that promotes genuine buy-in on your team?
Maybe if my idea is not the best, it's okay. I don't take it personally. And then if I see like their idea is good, then I go all and let's achieve it together.
Okay.
I don't embrace na how I English. Sorry. Meaning like I my idea is not personally, just how do I say it? Basta ng English.
Say it in Tagalog.
Oh no, I mean, Englishin mo nga, please.
I mean, translate it.
No. I can do it.
Interpret for.
I will.
Go ahead, speak.
I don't identify with my idea. It is just a thought. No, it's just.
Interpret in
Tagalog.
Tagalog.
Oh no.
No.
I'm here to translate for you. Sige.
Takot ka, salo mawawala. Wait lang. Bilisan mo.
No, please, I mean, wait.
No.
Make it faster.
Guys, ang gulo mo, teka. Lalo mawawala to. I mean, and if it's not the best, I'm fine with it.
I have no idea what we're talking about.
No, I mean, I'll rephrase it, Pastor Paul. Okay.
Are we talking about your single most effective thing?
It's the most effective thing.
Okay. Let's talk about your most frequent mistake.
Mistake. Maybe there's a tendency to come across too strong if I believe too much with my idea.
But why does that erode buy-in?
Sometimes it causes people to step back and say like, oh, yan na yon. We'll agree with that. That's it. That's the idea. So sometimes
you get consensus, but not commitment.
Yeah. Sometimes it hold like the people to speak up and express themselves more and just stop the process and say, oh, that's it because you've been with experience on this and all. But yeah, what I'm trying to say a while back is I don't really identify with my idea as mine, and if it's vetoed or it's not the best, I'm fine with it. And if the other ideas are okay, I'll run with it, we'll achieve it together, because I see the big picture or the vision. So
great.
That's just it.
Cry, so who would you like to hear from?
My friend Janelle.
Miss Janelle, we haven't heard from you today. Can you stand? What's the single most effective thing you do that promotes genuine buy-in on your team?
Because I work a lot with volunteers. So when I'm leading the teams with volunteers, I find that vision casting always gets people to buy in.
Really?
With the idea. Yes, because you paint the bigger picture, and what I do is I paint the picture and then I say, okay, this is your role in this picture, and highlight their significance in that role and how important
Great.
That is.
Excellent.
So because volunteers, they don't work for it and all that, they don't get paid.
What's the most frequent mistake you make?
My mistake is I think agreement is commitment. So sometimes I come back frustrated because it's like, okay, wait, but you said yes to this, and we came out of this meeting, and all of you raised your hand, and you said, okay. But then when it comes to results, we don't see anything. So it's parang it's all talk, and then nothing, no output.
So to
mistake that. And then it's because...
And because they're volunteers, you can't even fire them.
Yeah. And sometimes I want to fire some people. No, you can't. And one thing that I noticed is because I highly, highly avoid conflict.
You do?
Yes. There is trust, but then the conflict isn't there. So.
Yeah, but fear of conflict at some level comes back to trust. You're slowly moving into your seat. Yes, you may. You have to figure out there's a trust issue somewhere at some point and build that, strengthen that up so that the genuine conflict takes place. All right, that's all for today. We're gonna get out early. We got a lot to do this week, don't we? I have nothing left. Let's go home. We'll see you next week. God bless you. But, yes, Tricia?
Is this our last week of class?
No, there's two more. Okay, we thought this would take 2 weeks, but it hasn't. So next week, I'm going to teach you how to study the Bible. So we're gonna have a Bible study class. And then we'll end with a prophetic presbytery in 2 weeks.
Yeah, so.
Yeah? Is that true, Carlos?
Yeah, so if you want to miss the last week, you're free to do so. So. November 24? November 24.
Cricket's under a lot of stress. Budget. That's okay.
Hey.
Go home. Love you. Trish? Do whatever you want to do. Carol says I can't play bingo.